In general, there is a halacha that we're not supposed to stir anything while it's on the fire. Even if something is fully cooked. Now, if something is fully cooked, what do we have to be worried about? If something is fully cooked, what am I possibly concerned about?
Heating liquid?
Absolutely nothing. If it's fully cooked, that means it's hot. There's nothing to be worried about. Nevertheless, there's a chumrah not to stir something that's on the fire, because maybe there might be something that's not fully cooked. Maybe there's one bean somewhere deep in the depths of your, whatever you're cooking, whatever's on the fire, and you, by stirring, might, you know, make that cook. That's a chumrah. It is a halacha. It's a halacha that's a chumrah. By halacha, I mean, it's not like, oh, it's a chumrah, you don't have to worry about it. It's a chumrah, and you do have to worry about it. That was just the only additional point I wanted to add to crock pots. In general, we should try not to stir. Let me not say it like that. We may not stir crock pots while they are on the heating element, while they are being heated, while they're sitting in the while the inner thingy is in the outer thingy. Now that chumrah has a chumrah upon itself. It's a double chumrah. Not only are we not supposed to stir something while it's on the flame, but as a gzera to that, we should also not spoon out from things while they're on the flame. So if you want to stir out from a pot, let's say you have soup, you want to ladle out a bowl of soup for somebody, of course, you don't do it while it's on the flame, you remove it, then you ladle out, and then if you did all the five conditions of chazar, which we talked about previously, not tonight, you put it back on the flame. So again, we don't stir things on the fire, nor do we scoop out from things while they're on the fire, we take them off the fire and then do it. Crock pot the same, you should not spoon out or stir while it's on the fire. Except we talked about last week the possibility, if you want to cheat on Friday night and not put it back, that we discussed last week, I'm not going to get into now. That's just to finish off the crock pots question. Yeah.
We talked about cleaning the adding
hot water. Oh, we never talked about adding hot water. Okay, you are permitted to add hot water to a crock pot. Now, there's two ways to do it, the ideal way and the not ideal way. The ideal way to do it, and this is a little bit, it depends what your situation in your kitchen is. The ideal way to do it is the following. Well, let me preface. The Gemara talks about something called pina, not a corner. Pina means to clean out. Lefanot makom, clear, make room. Pina, to clear out mimecham, from one urn, lemecham, to another urn. It is permitted on Shabbos to take something out of one pot on the flame and put it into a different pot that is on the flame. Okay, so if I have, let's say, hot water in one pot in a tea kettle, and I want to add it to the soup because my soup is drying out, so I could take hot water from the tea kettle and pour it into the soup. Maybe I would take the soup off the flame and then pour it in so it doesn't stir as it pours. That is permitted. So, applying to a cholent which is drying out, which is very reasonable, especially if you forgot to turn it on low when Shabbos came in. So your soup is drying out, you had a certain amount of liquid there, and then, it's getting drier and drier and drier. So the halacha is, you are permitted. It's a kula, Baruch Hashem. After chum, it's always good to have a counterbalance. The halacha is you're permitted to add hot water. Now, how do we do it? Ideally, you take the crock pot out of the... Well, let's talk about a west bend. You have the flat crock pot without any issues of taking out and putting back in. You have a west with a flat crock pot. You'll take it off the flame or the element. You'll put it directly underneath your pump pot, underneath your urn. I guess hold it a little bit away so that the meat flavor doesn't go into your spigot. And pour directly from the Kli Rishon. Kli Rishon means the place where the fire is heating up the water, directly into the cholent pot. Or, if you have a tea kettle, you take the tea kettle and pour directly, hold it a few inches higher so the meat flavor won't go straight into the spigot. Pour directly from the tea kettle into the crock pot. That's ideal. Very often that's not reasonable. For example, a few possibilities. Let's say your tea kettle is plugged in. For example, you have a pump pot or some kind of urn, and you can't get it to where the crock pot is. You can't get the crock pot to where the thingy is. So then, second level option, not as good, but still mutter, is you just take a cup, pump your pump pot till I have a cup full of water, and then I take this cup full of water and just pour it into the crock pot. Okay? That is mutter. That is mutter. Again, if you have a crock pot that's flat, let me rephrase that. If you have a crock pot that's flat, the west bend, life is easier because you just take it off, pour the hot water in, even if it makes it a little mix around, even if it causes a little bit of mixing because you're adding the water, you're pouring the water, the pressure of the water is pushing, is moving around the stuff inside. That's okay, it's not on the flame, and then you put it back on the flame. It's a little more confusing when you have a crock pot that we, like most of us have, which is with the height of the walls, inside the height of the walls, which we talked about earlier last week or 2 weeks ago about taking it out and putting it back in. That's a little bit problematic, according to many. Those who were here last week know what I'm referring to. Chazola tocha tanur. And therefore, it would be better just to, I guess, pour very gently directly over the crock pot with a cup of water. So ultimately, you can pour hot water in. Just the question of, do you take the crock pot to the water and go directly from the Kli Rishon into the Kli Rishon, directly from the kettle into the crock pot? And second best, if that's not an option, is use an intermediary. Use an intermediary cup to bridge the tea kettle with your crock pot. That's second best. Okay? Yeah. We said that's a machlokes whether you're from Galicia or from Lita. So do a little research and find out where your opposite is from. Does that answer your question?
No better answer.
The Shulchan Aruch says that it's mutter to put something cold if there is a blech. Shulchan Aruch allows you to
put the hot water.
Right, so the hot water urn. Oh, you're saying it's non-adjustable. So the non-adjustable hot water urn, so you're saying it doesn't need a blech? So let's talk about a tea kettle, then we'll get to hot water. If you have a tea kettle and you put the tea kettle on a blech, and now you want to put the cold water right before Shabbos, so Shulchan Aruch says that's okay. Rabbi Kaveger is machmir and says that's not a good idea. Let it be warm before Shabbos. Okay. Now you're talking about a hot water urn. Hot water urn doesn't need a blech, so you don't have a blech here. Or by definition, it is a blech because it's not adjustable. You're saying, what could be the concern? The concern is I might play with the flame. It's not adjustable. So if it's a non-adjustable, it probably would be okay, Miyakar Hadin, to put it down. That's Miyakar Hadin. The Chumra of the Rebbe Kaveger is to have it heated.
And that... Shabbos,
so you didn't... to be
samech
on the kul of the Shulchan Aruch, yeah.
Do I have to have a reboil button?
That's something that I wanted to look into. For the first time, in your honor, for the first time in my life, I did last week. Because, hey, it's how can we call it a non-adjustable? Something that's non-adjustable, you don't have to cover, right? But if it's adjustable, you have to cover the possibility of adjusting it, which is a reboil button. So I covered it for the first time just out of lack of knowledge, not out of knowledge. But I have to. You could send me. You can remind me during the week. So we have to. There could be a new chumra coming out of this shiur. No one's ever spoken about this chumra ever in history. And the women's shiur, Rabbi Orlean's Monday night women's shiur, will be mechadish a chumra, covering over a blech for you. And we could have it embroidered, you know, in a very pretty kind of, you know, knitted, heat resistant way. Of course, not that insulates the urn, because that'll be a different issue of hatmana. And it'll cover the reboil button. It was actually a little bit hard to get the aluminum foil to stick on, because at the point where it just sort of slips off, I had to do a little, you know, tucking and nipping here and there. Yes? Excellent point. If you are contributing to it cooking, that would be very bad. So I would assume it should be fully cooked. Yeah, let's assume that it has to be fully cooked. Thank you. But usually that is the case. Usually by the time you're worried about it drying out, it's either very late Friday night, or it's, you know, or Shabbos morning before you go to shul. But when you wake up Shabbos morning, like, oh my gosh, it's really dry. By that time, it usually is very cooked. So that's just when you realize that it's dried out. But yeah, I think so. Oh, if it's not on the fire and it's already mevushal kol tzarko, I think if it's mevushal kol tzarko, I think you would be able to. Yes. Exactly. It is a little bit different because stirring is more, you're really moving stuff. By tasting it, you're just tasting it, and it might cause a tiny bit of movement to occur. So stirring is more chamer than tasting, but essentially, Yeah, I think you can. I have to double check it, but I think you can. Okay, that's the end of crockpots. We're finished with crockpots for now. Enjoy. I hope it comes out good. To begin tonight's shiur, new series, we're going to talk about Tefillas Kelah. I was inspired, as I mentioned to somebody here, somebody last week asked me, what's the deal about toveling a George Foreman grill? And I said, oh, that's funny, because I had a long conversation with somebody 2 weeks ago about that question. And we were going back and forth with that person I had spoken to 2 weeks ago. On one hand, if you immerse a George Foreman grill, then it could get ruined. On the other hand, if you don't, you might be over in a Sederaisa. So how do you deal with that, and where do we find ourselves in the middle of those two tensions pulling us? So I figured, I'll tell you why I didn't want to, a lot of you thought we were probably going to continue in Hilchot Shabbos. I just thought in my mind that after so many weeks of Blechs and Michael Ben Jusai and Mavusha Kol Tzarko, I just thought our brains would sort of turn into mush, and it would be good to have a totally unrelated topic, and maybe in a little few weeks we could start, you know, with a little break, and we could maybe come back to cooking on Shabbos again, perhaps we will see where life takes us. So that's why I wanted to interrupt with something unrelated to Shabbos, unrelated to Bishul, unrelated to crockpots, although Chant will always stay very dear and close to our hearts and minds throughout, but we could talk about Tovel and crockpots. Let's start with the very, very beginning. The very, very beginning is a pasuk. Who knows where the pasuk that refers to Tefillas Kelim is found? It has to do with, it's a story in the Torah. It's not even one of the mitzvahs, like in Mishpatim, for example, where it just lists mitzvahs. It's not. It's a part of a story. Anyone else? Yeah, okay, what do you say? Where? It happens not to be Dvarim, but that's not important. Where would it be? What story would it be? Correct. Right, that's in Midbar, but that's not the important point. When Bnei Yisrael finish fighting with Midbar, we take over all of their loot, we take over their cities and their materials, and Hashem says, or Moshe says, okay. Actually, Elazar HaKohen says, Zos Kukasa Torah, Sher Tzva Semesh Moshe, I'll read two psukim to you. They're going to be very important. Yes, Bamidbar, Parshas Matos, Perek Lamed Aleph. Towards the end of the Perek, the whole Perek talks about the Melchama that we have with Midian. And again, it's not just a mitzvah like, and this is how you do Tefillas Kelim. No, it's a part of a story. After they conquered Midian and they wanted to take the property from Midian, listen carefully to two psukim. I wish I could have you look inside, but we'll just save time. Ach es hazahav ves hakesef ves hanachoshes ves habarzel ves habedil. What's bedil? Some kind of metal? Can't be steel because they didn't have steel then. Okay, v'esa afaris. Afaris is lead. So we have zahav, we know what that is. Kasef, nechoshes is what, brass, copper? Mm-hmm. What's nechoshes? Okay. Copper. Barzel, that's iron. Bedil, I forgot. And afaris, we have six different metals. That what? Puzzle just lists all six different metals. What about them? Next puzzle. Kol davar asher yavo ba'esh, anything that became treif through fire, that, you know, you cooked with it through fire, for example, a grill, for example, a spit that you put through your meat, tavir ba'esh, you put it through fire to cleanse it from that treif. What is that called? That's called libun. That's how we kosher things. That's how we kosher ovens. They absorbed tarfas through fire. We kosher it by putting it again through fire. And then the end of the pasuk says, we'll get to the middle in a moment. The end of the pasuk says, "Kol asher lo yavo ba'esh," things that are not, you know, don't absorb their tarfus, the meat or whatever else you're cooking, the not kosher stuff that you're cooking, that's not through fire, taviu b'mayim, but through water. For example, let's say you have a pot that you absorbs. I don't know, you're boiling some shrimp stew, so the shrimp gets into the pot through the stew, through the liquid. So therefore, how do you kasher it? Not with a blowtorch, not with fire, but rather by, how do you kasher a pot? By boiling water inside of it. Those are the two ways to kasher. This is the pasuk. The two ways to kasher, treif pots, are learned out from a story where we conquered Midian, we took their pots, they were treif, we want to eat from them. How could we? So anything that they use with fire, we have to kasha with fire. That's called libun. Anything that they that absorb the flavor of treif with liquid or not with fire, we kasha in a more lenient way just by having it in boiling water. That's called hagala. That's the simple reading of the pasuk. So the pasuk lists six metals, and those metals, they're treif. I got they were cooked in the Midian kitchens. I want to kasha them. I kasha them either with fire or with water. Let's just read the pasuk a little more carefully. We'll see an extra word or two, and that word is going to be important for us tonight. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech Haolam Shehakol Nehiyeh Bidvaro. Kol asher yavo ba'esh tavir ba'esh v'taher. That extra word. And then a few more words. Ach b'mei nida yischata. It has to be purified b'mei nida. Waters of a nida. Those extra words, the first word v'taher, is completely extra. Because the pasuk said, whatever absorbed the not kosher food with fire, put into fire. Obviously, and then it will become kosher. What's v'taher? So v'taher, the Gemara will see in a moment, tells us that means another level of tahara besides making it kosher. And what is that? That's tzvilas kelim. This is the pasuk that teaches us tzvilas kelim. What do I do with it? You put it in waters, ach b'mei nida, in waters of a nida. Waters of a nida is waters that a nida can go into, which is a mikvah. So we see in the pasuk clearly an extra word, v'taher. Again, after I already kashered, it says you still need v'taher. You need an extra level of purity or an extra level of cleanliness, something to a thing that you already just kashered. What is that? Tefilas kelim, putting it in a mikvah. As the pasuk says, b'mei nida, the waters of a nida, that's a mikvah. Now, that is the source in the psukim for tefilas kelim being a mitzvah d'oraisa. Now, it's not a lo ta'aseh, it's an aseh, because the pasuk is saying, Elazar is telling B'nai Yisrael and the warriors, go ahead and do this. You have to do this. So it's not saying, don't eat a pot unless you did tefilas kelim. It's saying, this is how you take. This is how when you conquer all your pots and pans and forks and knives. This is how you do it. So it's a mitzvah saseh. Mitzvah saseh to do tefilas kelim. One very cute question, which is also a historical question. We're now fighting Midian. Midian, if you sort of imagine B'nai Yisrael's here, it's a bit easier for you. If you imagine B'nai Yisrael starting down here, Mitzrayim, they're going over here, sort of circling around, crossing over the Yarden into Eretz Yisrael, right? I'm facing opposite because you could follow my hands. When they go this way, they already hit, you know, Midian is sort of right as they're, is closer to the border. They already fought with Sichon, they already fought with Og, earlier in the Chumash. So how come only here do we start with the halachas of how do you kasha the kelim? Didn't they have this problem, I don't know, a year, a few months, or 5 years earlier? Let's say a year earlier, a few months earlier, by earlier battles, before Midian? Just a historical question. How come all of a sudden now, by Midian, I mean, they had this issue 3 months ago by a previous fight, by previous battles with other nations. This question is asked by the Daz the Canaan. The question is fascinating. The answer is just very practical. He says, if you look at the Pesukim, you'll see that the earlier battles doesn't say that they conquered the city. It says that they battled. They battled on a battlefield. I'm assuming that when they battled on a battlefield, the Og and his people and Sichon and his people didn't necessarily have their pots and pans with them on the battlefield. As opposed to Midian, that when they battled with Midian, it was in the cities, as the Pesukim indicate, and the battles were in the cities, so therefore there were actually pots and pans to conquer right at the victory. And that's why only here, this is the first time where they have an issue of, okay, you now captured treif pots and pans, you have to deal with it. Okay, that was a complete aside, just a historical point. So we have mitzvah d'oraisa to do, presumably mitzvah d'oraisa to do tefilas kelim. Why do we have to do tefilas kelim? One thing that everybody points out is this has nothing to do with kashrus. There's nothing treif in these. And we'll see, the Gemara will say, even if it's a brand new kli, like we all know, You have to do two kamos. It's nothing to do with the fact that the things are treif, because as we learned from the pasuk, you already kashered it. The pasuk says it was in you cook it with fire. Let's say a grill that grills shrimp on, that grills pork on it. You grilled it. The midyanim grilled it. Tavir ba'esh. So you put it you took fire and you put it in a self-clean oven, or you did a blowtorch with it. Tavir ba'esh. And still after that, there's still a vitaher, still needs something else. So you don't have to kosher, it's already kosher. So what is that extra thing that you're adding? It's not kashrus. It's not tumma either. Even though the pasuk says vitaher, it's not coming to fix tumma, because we're not talking about anything that ever became tummy in the first place. Tumma works with certain rules, and we don't see that only if it became tummy, that's when you have to do tefillas kelim. So what is tefillas kelim for? So there are a few different ideas. Again, this is not halacha, this is just sort of to understand in our own minds. The simplest reason is just that it's not a reason. The Rush says, the Rush in Avodah Zarah says, that's Exeris HaKasav. There's no dhamma for reasons. It's one of those things, it's just Exeris HaKasav, Hashem said, decree. It is what it is because it is. Not for any reason, not for any purpose. That's what, just is, for some reason, Hashem wants there to be Tefillas Kelim. There's a Yerushalmi that's cited in the Ritva that has an interesting language. I'm going to share with you five words. And these words will click in our Talmudic minds another idea that will shed light on why we have to do Tefillas Kelim in the very first place. Sheyat'u mitum'asan shel goyim likdushasan shel Yisrael. They left the tumma of goyim and entered the kedushas Yisrael. Does that phrase? So what do I do? How do I make it leave the tumma of goyim and enter kedushas Yisrael? I put it in a mikvah. Does that setup remind you of anything in some other aspect of Torah? Again, leave tumma shel hagoyim and enter kedushas Yisrael by putting it in a mikvah. What geirus? Geirus, yes, that's what it sounds like. Just like a ger somehow shifts his or her identity, persona, nature, whatever it is, through tefillah b'mikvah, so too the pots and pans also somehow have their, I don't want to say their personalities and identities, but they shift whatever their status is from being Midians to Bnei Israels or whoever, you know, Home Depots or, you know, Ace Hardwares or whatever else, or Bed Bath & Beyond, where you bought your pots, to, you know, Friedman, Cohn's, you know, Steinwurzels, whatever your last name might be, through going to the mikvah. It's like a geirus, almost. The third reason, potentially, this I didn't see anywhere, this is my own discovery, is, I'll tell you how I found it. Those people who learn Rambam is a little bit different than other things that people learn. Why? Because the Rambam writes himself that I wrote this book so that you could figure out everything you need to know from being a dayik in the exact wording and phraseology that I used. We do that not with so many things. We do it with the Mishnayos, we do that, Gemara's here, there. But the Rambam, of all the Rishonim, the Rambam is probably the one that we're most particular in the choice of why this word and why this word and why he put this over there and why he juxtaposed this to this. So what does he mean by when he uses a conjunctive word? And what's the and telling me? Why? How is what I see now connected to what I said before? Listen to what the Rambam says. The Rambam has a list. He goes through Hilchas Tefillas Kelim. Right after he finishes the Halachas of Tefillas Kelim, I'll tell you what he writes. V'yesh dvarim achem. There are other things that Chacham say you shouldn't do, even though it's not Asa D'Oraisa, but the Rabbanim wanted us l'hisrachik min ha'akum, to be misrachik from Goyim, so that we don't have inappropriate social interactions, and marry them, for example, not to drink with them, and not to have pas akum, and not to have bishul akum. Again, he started this little paragraph, after he finished Tefillas Kelim, the next line is, and there are other things that Chazal asserts that we don't have, you know, inappropriate social interactions and come to marry Goyim. So it just sounds to me that the juxtaposition of this Rambam coming on the heels of Tefillas Kelim, it sounds like maybe the Rambam's understanding that Tefillas Kelim is another thing just like Pasakum and bishalakum and yayin nasach, not to have, you know, social interactions in a way that might lead to things that we're not happy about. Maybe if I know that I can't use a pot that was given to me or sold, even sold to me by a guy, then that will create a certain appropriate boundary that will prevent intermarriage from ever even coming close to occurring. That's just a new insight into why there exists this whole idea of Tefillas Kelim. That was all introduction. That was all, you know, the psukim, history, the reasons. Now let's get into some of the halachas of Tefillas Kelim. Now, I'm not sure how I'm going to do this. There are about five different topics within Tefillas Kelim, maybe six different points. And I wasn't sure if I should mention all five or six points and then deal with each of them independently, or I should just not introduce anything until I do one topic fully, then another topic fully. But I just didn't prepare the second way. I prepared the first way such that I'm going to mention five or six points. They're all found in one place in the Gemara. We'll go through those 5 points, and then as we go tonight, and maybe another, we'll see how many classes this will be, we'll go through the details of those points. So, for those of you who want to write down, all of the halachas of Tefillas Kelim is in one short Gemara in Avodah Zarah, the last page. Last page of Avodah Zarah, Ayin Hei Amud Bet, 75b. There, the Gemara tells me everything I have to know about Tefillas Kelim, all in one cute package with a ribbon on it, tied around it. The Gemara, I wish I would have made copies so everybody could see it. I'll just tell you the different things that the Gemara points out. It brings the source that we said. There's an extra word in the pasuk that says after you kashrit vitaher, you need something else to make the pots of Midian usable. Vitaher, that extra word. That's how we know that you have to do. That's how we know you have to do Tefillas Kelim. Where do you have to do it? The pasuk says the main nida, in waters that a nida could go into, which is a proper size mikvah 40 sa'ah. That's the minimum size of a kosher mikvah. Then the Gemara points out this applies even to brand new kelim. Again, even though they're not treif anymore, they're brand new. You still have to do Tefillas Kelim. The Gemara then asks an interesting question. If you're telling me that has nothing to do with treif or not treif, well, next time I buy a pair of scissors to do an arts and crafts project, I don't know, to shear the wool off my sheep, or, I don't know, to cut my hair, which for me hasn't been such a problem over the past few years. It's okay, you could laugh. It's okay, I won't be offended. If I buy a pair of scissors, asks the Gemara, for non-food purposes. So, let's think for a moment. If you tell me that this has to do with kashrus, I understand that this halacha Tefillas Kelim refers to food items, to items that have to do with preparing food. Once you tell me that it has nothing to do with kashrus, and even after you already kashered it, you still need to do this new process of Tefillas Kelim, so that just means that any metal that you take from a guy, you have to give this gerus to. You have to just dip it in a mikveh for whatever reason. Where do you see this has to do anything with food? So if I buy a pair of scissors for my arts and crafts and for my shearing, wool shearing, I should have to do Tefillas Kelim. Again, you're telling me it has nothing to do with kashrus. If it had to do with kashrus, I understand. It has to be only for food items. So the Gemara says, if you look at the psukim, where the whole source of Tefillas Kelim are, the psukim that we mentioned before, in the context of Midian, where did it say that you have to do Tefillas Kelim? On what? On what kind of things? On those things that absorbed treif and now you kashrut. So the psukim themselves are telling you that Tefillas Kelim is on those things that you use for food, that became treif, and now you want to use it for kosher. So it's all talking about, even though it has nothing to do with kashrut itself, but on what do you do it? On things that have to do with, on kelim that themselves are related to kashrut. So they could be kosher, they could be brand new, We're not trying to fix the problem of being treif, but it's only done, tefillas kehilah is only done to things that can potentially become treif and kosher. So therefore we know that tefillas kehilah is not on just, you know, hair cutting scissors, but only on food items, kehilah that relate to food items. Another halacha that same Gemara tells us is that it only applies when you own it. Meaning, I don't have to do tefillas kehilim if I'm invited to the Midian's house. If Midian would have invited me, and let's say, again, brand new kehilim, or he kashered them already, but they're his. Do I have to do tefillas kehilim on it? No, mitzvah of tefillas kehilim is when you take it over from the Midian, you capture it from them, or you bought it from the storekeeper, or you bought it from Mr. Bed Bath & Beyond, and now it's yours, now you have to do tefillas kehilim, and that's going to be very important. Because that tells you that the tefillas kehilim is a mitzvah on you when you become an owner. It's not that any pot that is used in my kitchen must have had tefillas kehilim. It's that any pot that I own must have tefillas kehilim. So let's say, for example, you have a maid in your house, a live-in, and she has her own tea kettle. Let's assume that she just boils her water in there. So we don't have to worry about anything treif or anything usser. No bishul akum, because water is not going to make bishul akum. So she has her tea kettle, and she owns it. And my tea kettle breaks. You think tea kettles don't break? We once had somebody staying in our house, and we came back, and we saw there's a new tea kettle. And so what happened? They said it broke. So tea kettles, I don't know how, but tea kettles break. So your tea kettle broke, and now you want to use her tea kettle. Can you? It doesn't have to feel scalen. Again, we're not worried about kashas, because it's a tea kettle, it's just water. She didn't squeeze shrimp juice into the, you know, tea kettle, hoping to be mashala. Just water. So halacha is, it's not yours. You're not obligated to be tovel the guy's tea kettle. It's not a halacha that I can't use food that was cooked in a untoveled item. I don't own it, so I don't have to tefillas kehilim on it. If I borrow it from a guy, If I borrow it from a guy, I don't have to wear the tefillas kehilim. By the way, this might not be so halacha l'maaseh in this room right now. Maybe in a few days it will be. If you borrow a four-cornered garment from your friend, not you, if somebody borrows a four-cornered garment from his friend, it's not chayiv and tzitzis. They could walk around with a four-cornered shawl for a week, for 2 weeks, and not wear tzitzis on it. Aren't they violating a mitzvah of seder ha'aris of tzitzis? They're going out of the way and wearing a four-cornered garment? No. The halacha is that if it's a beged she'ula, beged that's borrowed, it's not chayiv and tzitzis in the first place. Same thing here. If it's borrowed from the guy, it's not even chayiv in tefillas kehilim in the first place, and it's okay. That could be very significant if you're, for example, eating in a restaurant that's, let's say, owned by a guy. I didn't get into the detail. I didn't learn up the figure at this point myself in the posting yet, but just applying this logic, what ought to come out, that if you have a restaurant owned by a guy, and there are many kosher restaurants that are owned by Goyim, it's a business, and there's nothing wrong with that as long as it has a good hashgacha, does the kehilim need to be toveled? They're not owned by a Jew. They're owned by a guy. You're allowed, as long as it's kosher, you could drink from kehilim that are kosher kehilim that are owned by a guy. Tefillas kehilim only applies like by Midian, where we took it from the Midianim. You go to a hotel, and you get a drink. You get a Diet Coke without a lemon in a hotel lounge. I assure you, they didn't use to do tefillas kehilim on that glass that you're using. We'll talk about glass soon also. Even if it's a metal cup, glass also. That's okay. Why? Because it's not a Jew's, it's a guy's. Yes, question. Well, if you own a kli, you shouldn't use it unless you do tefillah. Right. So you're asking a fabulous question. You're asking a question that we have to deal with because it really does come up. I'll tell you where it came up with me. I was at a relative's barbecue, and the relative was so proud, and he said, "This barbecue grill, I just brought it. I just went to Home Depot, wherever it was. I just came back from the store. I bought a special barbecue grill just for the barbecue." So I read between the lines and said, I figured out that it probably didn't make its way to the mix. Does that make the food? Oh, so that's your question?
No, I mean, as far as I know, it's not.
So that we're going to talk about. You're probably right. The food does not become usur if it wasn't toveled. You might be right. If you're not right, the reason would be that it was how it did transfer from a guy to a Jew. Once it transferred from a guy to a Jew, there might be halacha on it. That could be. I have to have to see how we go. I'm not sure. Somebody else had a question here?
Yeah. I forgot.
I'm sure it was a good question. This way we can be sure it was good. Okay. Next point that this Gemara. This, again, these all, I'm just listing off different halakhas that we'll talk about each one in detail as we go. What kind of materials? Well, it was an explicit pasuk. The pasuk mentioned six different kinds of metals. Only metals. Period. Nothing to talk about. It's a pasuk. There's no, you don't need a Rashi, you don't need a Ramban. It's a pasuk in Chumash that mentions six different metals. In fact, you know what one of those metals are not? It does not say aluminum in that list. And therefore, you know what, my friends? Aluminum probably does not need, forget about aluminum foil disposable, I'm going to throw it out, that's a whole different, let's say I have a real aluminum pot, aluminum probably does not need tefillos kelim midaraisa. Maybe midarabanan will suggest, because it looks like everything else, but aluminum is not one of those six metals, so only one of those six metals that's listed in the Torah need tefillos kelim. What is somebody going to ask me? What about? What? Glass. What about glass? I thought we did tefillos kelim on glass, don't we? That's not metal. That's not in the pasuk. The Gemara beat you to it. The Gemara says, Amar Rav Ashi, all the things that are in the pasuk are metals. However, klei zechuchis, modern Hebrew and Aramaic, and ancient Hebrew, same word. Since when they break, yesh lahen takana, they can be fixed, which I'm assuming means they could be melted down and recast, and reformed, that is presumably on a Rabbanan level, just like metals. So in other words, Rabbanan said that that glass is a little bit similar. I don't know if any of you ever went to see a glass blower. We had a group of, and during the summers, we have a group of Machina students that we take to Israel. And we spent one afternoon in Tzfat, and we wanted to do an activity, you know, get that mix of like the arts with something Torahic. There's a young lady who does beautiful glass blowing in her studio, so we all went there, and she sort of tells her story and talks about like God creating the world in the, there's actually some chazal that say in the same way of a glass blower. You were there? No? The same way a glass blower sort of blows light, blows air into this clump of molten glass, and then it gets bigger, and the life goes into. Okay, she's sort of telling us about herself. You know, she graduated Yale, and now she's blowing glass in Tzfat. It was just a fascinating, you know, cultural. It was obviously a highly intelligent person, and made an impact on our students, I think. So it's molten. It's actually, when I was little, some of you know my mother from Stern College. So she used to teach chemistry. And when I was little and I had a day off from school, I'd sort of tag along to the chemistry lab. And how do you keep an 11-year-old busy? He's off from school, so you have to do something with me. So my mother's working. So she took me and she would take me to the chemistry lab and give me a bar of glass and a Bunsen burner. Somebody would be around, and I'd take my bar of glass and hold the middle over the Bunsen burner, and I'd twist it, and I'd shape it, and I'd bend it, and then after you take it off the Bunsen burner and it hardens, it's like a solid stick of glass. It's like a solid, hard piece of glass. It's incredible. Well, you know what else works like that? Matachas, metals, the same idea. Works the same way. You could form it, you could figure it, you can melt it. So Chazal realized that there's a very close similarity. People might get confused, presumably. So just like there's the halach of tefillos kelim midaraisa is by those six metals, so too Chazal applied it, extended it also to glass. So those are the two things that require tefillas kelim. Metal midaraisa, glass presumably midrabanan, and
how come plastic
isn't the same? Ooh, I was about to ask that. What about plastic? Plastic you can melt. Could you melt plastic?
Yeah.
What happens when you take a plastic
like you put it in
spoon?
A microwave sometimes and
all. Yeah, what happens if you put it in a fire? What happens if you put a spoon? And this happens. Like if you ever do, what's it called, the bir chametz before Pesach? And you drop in your bag and then you realize there's a plastic something there? So it doesn't really melt. It's sort of...
It gets stinky.
I guess that's a little hot, but if you're like in fire, it doesn't... In fire, it just sort of disintegrates. But I have the same question. Actually, some posts can suggest, I saw this, if you want to be machmer on this, you can. No, I don't think anyone else will be, but the rationale would apply. If you want to say, hey, the Chazal were worried 2,000 years ago when they wrote the Gemara that Zuchuchis is just like metals because it could be molten and recast just like metal. So, hey, let's also be machmer and say the same thing as plastic. You could do that. You could be machmer. Don't say you heard it from me. Yes?
What about ceramic?
Okay, excellent. I don't really know what ceramic is. Earthenware?
Yeah.
Earthenware is not metal, and earthenware is not glass. Hold on. And therefore, earthenware does not need tefillah. However, you probably didn't mean earthenware. You probably meant ceramic. Earthenware... No one here would ever buy or serve anything on real earthenware. Earthenware was like, you remember when you were little, like you went to the clay factory and you made your plate, right? It's very dull. It's probably somewhat absorbent. It's going to absorb flavors. It's going to absorb the stuff that you put in. It doesn't look pretty, even after you paint it. Oh, but that's a different story. Once you glaze it, right, earthenware is not metal, nor is it glass. Once it's glazed, then we have to talk about the glazing. What does the word glaze mean? It's glassed. Right, glassed means that you have some stuff on top of it that's a glass, so it depends on, I don't know, I have to get into the details of how they manufacture it. Somebody once told me that there's an excellent YouTube video about how they manufacture glazed ceramic, and maybe I'll try to watch it before the next. That's the name of the YouTube video?
No, that's what they put in.
But earthenware is put in a kiln. I wonder how they get that glaze.
The glaze is. I don't know you mean how to make the glaze.
I'm talking about commercial glaze. I'm not talking about the paints that you did when you went to that pottery place, four weeks ago on Tuesday night. Okay. Fine. So that's basically, actually, that's the last point that the Gemara talks about. The Gemara talks about something called kunya. Kunya, what is kunya? Kunya is, it's earthenware, and then it's covered over with some kind of glaze. Here it talks about a lead glaze. Here it talks about a different kind of glaze. So there the Gemara actually asks, is it to be considered like originally earthenware, or like now that you glazed it, the stuff that covers it? And the Gemara concludes like the stuff that you covered. It's like the glaze, and therefore we have to look at the glaze. If the glaze will be metal or the glaze will be glass, that will require tefillah. That's the end of the Gemara, and we just mentioned a whole bunch of five or six different points, and now we're going to begin to sort of unravel them in the next, 3.5 minutes. We'll not get to so many of them. I said the whole time, and I'm probably right, that there's a pasuk, and there's a mitzvah d'oraisa. Mitzvah saseh, now lo taseh. Just to be intellectually honest, let me read the Rambam to you. The Rambam is talking about tefillas kelim, and he says it has nothing to do with tumah, it has nothing to do with tara, it's just midivrei sofrim. What do those two words tell you? Sounds to me like derabanan. The remez, and a remez, a hint to that, is what the pasuk says, that it should be, after you kasha things, vitaher. It's a remez. It's a nice remez. Vitaher, that extra word that I told you before, it's a nice remez to hint to Tefillas Kelim. What does that sound like? It sounds like the Rambam holds that Tefillas Kelim is midarabanan. If Tefillas Kelim is midarabanan, it's going to shift a lot of, I mean, it's also, we have to do it equally, but you could imagine lots of different ways of, lots of different situations of machlokas and as the safek. There's a lot more maneuverability and room to be makel if it's only derabanan. However, and there's a musar lesson with this, many poskim read that same Rambam I just read to you, where he says that it's midivrei sofrim to do tefillas kelim from the words of the sofrim, sounds like derabanan, and they understand that is deraisa. So why are you saying, so what is midivrei sofrim? If you want to say it's from Hashem, it's a deraisa, say it's from mipi Hashem, midivrei Elokim chayim. Or midivrei Moshe, midivrei sofrim sounds like it's from rabbis, not from Hashem, Moshe Rabbeinu, sort of the same thing, in a sense. So here, we have to understand, and this is, I think, a very important lesson, unrelated to Tefillas Kelim, but I think very fundamental in a certain area of how halacha works. What did we get on Har Sinai? Last week was Parshas Yisro, right? We got Aseret Dibros, we had Maimon Har Sinai. What did we get on Har Sinai? What did Hashem give Moshe Rabbeinu? The Torah, right? All 613 mitzvahs, we got Hamishul Chamshei Torah. That's the truth. It is not the whole truth. Simultaneously to getting Chamishul Chamshei Torah, we got something else. What else did we get? Torah Shebaal Peh, which people think means Drabbanan. They think wrong. Torah Shebaal Peh does not mean Drabbanan. Torah Shebaal Peh means the Torah that wasn't written, but was Baal Peh. That's all it means. So this Rabbeinu Yonah in the beginning of Pirkei Avos actually highlights. When Moshe went to Har Sinai, he got two things. He got a Torah Shebasav and a Torah Shebaal Peh, which is Midaraisa. It's just not a written Daraisa. For example, tefillin has to be black on a Daraisa level. If your tefillin are not black, then you weren't Mekayem Mitzvah at all. Zero. Where does it say the Torah have to be black? It doesn't. So how do we know? Because it's Torah Shebaal Peh. You became a Bas Mitzvah when you were 12. Your brother became a Bas Mitzvah when he was 13. This has to be a Kezias. That has to be a Revius when you make whatever other mitzvah. Where do we get those numbers from? They're not in the Torah, anywhere. It doesn't say anywhere in the Torah, the number 12 years old or 13 years old. That's also another halacha l'moshe mitzina. It's part of the Torah Shebaal Peh that was given simultaneously to the Chamishul Chamshei Torah. So, says the Bas, that's exactly what's happening in this Rambam. There's some other Rambams also where the word divri sofrim is used, and he does not mean that it's midrabanan. Even the Rambam himself, when he says the word, by using the word midrabanan sofrim, what he means is that it was recorded by sofrim, meaning it was handed down. It was not in Chumash. It was not in Chumash Shechem Torah. It was handed down ish mi pi ish mi pi ish mi pi ish until Moshe Rabbeinu on Har Sinai that we should do Tefillas Kelim. So it's Daraisa. And it's Remez. The Remez is this Pasuk. But it's not that the Pasuk with the extra word Vitaher, like before I told you, oh, there's an extra word. Vitaher means there's another level of raising up your Kelim after you kasher them, a Vitaher. That Pasuk, that word Vitaher teaches you to do Tefillas Kelim. So here, the Rambam is not saying that. The Rambam is saying, no, the word Vitaher just means, I don't know what. But there's a tradition. Ish mipi ish, Moshe Rabbeinu understood, it was taught that there's a mitzvah of Tefillas Kelim, and either way, we come at that, everybody is holding that Tefillas Kelim is Daraisa. That's at least the majority of the poskim. However, as I mentioned earlier, Gleth, most do hold that it is only Darabana. Okay. A number of times, people called me with different... I think perhaps somebody here also a few weeks ago about different kinds of materials that pots, pans, bowls, plates might be made out of, and do we have to do Tefillas Kelim on this or that? I'll tell you what I told that person. I still think is the best because we probably won't remember whatever we're learning tonight in terms of the details. OU.org, in the search bar, put in Tefillas Kelim, K-E-I. I'm sure there are other creative ways you can spell Kalim. Type in Tefillas Kelim, and whatever it says there that you should do Tefillas Kelim on, Just follow what it says. Okay, we'll talk about that, but you're not going to remember it. People don't remember this. We'll talk about it, but I'm just telling you. And if you want to look at my notes, I just copied and pasted from OU.org, TK handbook, short for Tefillas Kelim handbook. You yourselves could do exactly what I did. Okay, but we'll... I can read it to you. I'm happy to read it to you and share it with you. But halacha ma'isa, when the halachas come up, you just look it up. You can't do Tefillas Kelim on Shabbos anyway. We'll talk about that some other time. So it's going to happen, the issue will come through in a week, and you could look up on OU.org. I'm sure Star-K also has something, and maybe I don't know what the Chavke's website is, and CRC also has, I'm so sure, but that's the best thing, and that's what I use, so I invite you to use as well. Okay, so we saw that there are six medals in the Pasuk. We said that plastic presumably does not need Tefillas Kelim. Cheres, earthenware, does not need Tefillas Kelim. Very significantly, wood does not need Tefillas Kelim. If you have a wood mixing spoon, that does not need Tefillas Kelim. Again, rubber, a lot of the newer, what's that black brand? What? Well, no, I'm talking about Teflon. No, I'm talking about the Rubbermaid, thank you. Rubbermaid, all those Rubbermaid kitchen utensils, those do not need Tefillas Kelim. Interestingly, and this is, I didn't know before I downloaded it, before I cut and pasted it from OU.org, coated pans do not need tefillah, I'm sorry, it says you should do tefillah kelim without a bracha. I assume Teflon is a kind of plastic coating, and I don't know, I didn't learn the sugya, but I'm just assuming that since it's not the metal of the pot that's touching your food, it's the plastic coating, so that gets a little bit, it doesn't really need. And disposal aluminum pans, mikadin, don't really need tefillas kelim. I think there's a Moshe Feinstein on it. I'll try to look it up before the next year. And
some people will that if you use it more than
one. That's what I'm going to look up for next year, yeah. But essentially, one-time use aluminum pans is not. Let's finish off with, we talked about the materials just now. We're finished with the materials. Any questions about the materials? Hopefully we'll do more research and we'll talk more in depth about specific materials in the future. But let's talk not about the materials, but the types of utensils that I'm using, and we'll finish with this topic. The only utensil, well, we said before that you're not going to tovo your scissors for haircuts or your scissors for shearing or even your scissors for cutting the pruning things for you when you get flowers and you cut the bottom of the stems off the flowers. What's that called? Pruning shears. The shears, yeah, I guess the shears. Okay. You only use do tefillas kelim for kelim that are clay achila, clay bishol, or clay hachana for the seuda. Anything that's a serving, that's cooking, that's basically kitchen utensils only. Now, let's get into some details, because there's some interesting things. There's a guy in my shir who eats oranges during shir. In my shir, we eat breakfast during class, because it gets people to shir earlier. They're not going to wake up early to eat breakfast. They're going to wake up at the same time, and they need to eat breakfast, so they're either going to come to shir 20 minutes later, or they'll eat in shir. So I prefer to eat in shir. So he eats in shir, and when he gets to his orange, he takes out a pocket knife. So as I realized I should start getting into Tefillas Kelim, I said something about, hey, did you do Tefillas Kelim on that pocket knife? So, does that pocket knife need Tefillas Kelim if you want to cut your orange or peel your orange with it? Mm-hmm. What happens if you don't want to use a pocket knife? You want to use a screwdriver. Why? Because you happen to be wherever you are and you happen to have a screwdriver. So should I not use a screwdriver to start my orange because I didn't do Tefillas Kelim on my screwdriver? It's a good question, right? You never thought of it, neither did I. I just talked about it. So let's talk about the following. Let's say we have a clay achila. Let's say I have a knife. You know why I bought this knife? It's a kitchen knife in Bed Bath & Beyond kitchen section. It's a regular kitchen knife. It happens to be I like using this knife for my woodwork. And whenever I shave my wood a certain way, and the way that knife cuts, it works well for my in my work, in my basement. I have a little workbench with my woodwork, my arts and crafts. I buy this knife. So do I have to do Tefillas Kelim for that my woodwork and my arts and crafts? It's a kitchen utensil, but it's not being employed for kitchen utensil uses. Do I need to do Tefillas Kelim? No, obviously not. That is correct. What happens if that very same knife I just pointed out that I bought for woodworking, and I'm down in my woodworking, my bench, my shop, and it's time for me to take a little snack, and I take out my orange, and I want to take that very knife that I bought for my woodworking and slice my orange with it. So here I'm in a bind. On one hand, why did I buy it? I bought it for only one thing, woodwork. That's what I use it for all the time. But what is it? Where did I buy it? I bought it in the Bed Bath & Beyond. I didn't go to Home Depot. I bought it in Bed Bath & Beyond, in the kitchen section. So it is a kli achila. So here, there's a machlokas. If we follow the rove usages of the item, again, this is an item that is primarily, it is a kli achila. It's a knife for food. However, primarily I use it for not food purposes. So do I have to do tefillas kelim on that? That's machlokas. So what do you do if there's machlokas? What should you do if there's a machlokas, whether something needs tefillas kelim or not? Do tefillas kelim without a bracha, correct. Now, this is a good question. Where, my friends, have you learned over the past few months a concept of defining a kli based on the majority of its usages? In Hilchos Muktzah, we talked about defining a kli as a kli shamlach to le'isser or not. You remember we talked about pots or Pyrex casserole dishes? Is that a kli shamlach to le'isser because most of the time I cook in it? Or most of the time I serve and I keep and I store and therefore it's not Muktzah? So pot, maybe most of the time I cook in a Pyrex casserole dish. I do cook in it, but most of the time I'm storing in the refrigerator or I'm serving it to my guests. Therefore it won't be Muktzah. Right. So that's a machlokas if we say that this knife, most of the time I use it for my woodwork, so therefore I never need tefillas kelim, even if I want to use it for my orange. But the other people say, it's a knife, it's a kitchen utensil, and you're using it for an orange, do tefillas kelim on it. Those are two sides of the coin, so it's a safek machlokas. We should do tefillas kelim without a bracha. Yes? So the Gemara says clearly, even if they're brand new. So we're not going to be able to say that it had any history, because the Gemara says clearly. The Gemara actually takes that same Gemara and twists it, takes the psukim and twists it in the opposite direction. Don't tell me that it has anything to do with having touched with food, because even though you kashered it, what does kashering do? It makes it as though it never touched the food, in a certain sense. You still, and now have to do this thing called b'mei nidah, put it in a mikvah, do tefillas kelim. So the Gemara is sort of saying, the Gemara understands those psukim that even if it never touched food, the very fact that it, even though it never touched food, it's brand new, you still have to tefillas kelim on it. Okay. So let's get to the second question we have. What about a screwdriver? Screwdriver, that's not a kli achila. I don't buy it in Bed Bath & Beyond in the kitchen section. I get it in Lowe's. I get it in Home Depot. But now I want to peel my orange. So here the halacha is that I can use it for peeling my orange as long as I don't do it regularly. If I use my screwdriver regularly, like every day I have an orange, every day I work in the same tool shop, and every day I need the same, you know, that orange has to get cut, you know, has to start the peel, whatever, peeling it, somehow, and I always have that screwdriver, so I always use a screwdriver to do it, so you better tell the screwdriver, you're using it as a kli achila. But if it's something that you just happen to be in a tool shop and happen to be eating an orange, you happen to figure, oh wow, I could actually start my orange with this screwdriver, then you do not need to do tefillas kelim. What about my friend, my student's pocket knife? I have to think about this. I have to actually ask a shayla. Is a pocket knife a kli achila? Nah, it's not a food. It's a Swiss Army kind of, you know, guy, macho, carrying a knife kind of thing. It's not good for it. But if he uses it on a regular basis to cut his oranges, maybe that should be the same as a screwdriver. I think so. On the other hand, if he does it just once in a while when he happens to have an orange, then maybe he wouldn't. That's something I have to think about. Yes, question. Okay, so that's a very good question. I'm gonna adjust your question because there's a halacha that we didn't talk about. Let's not talk about the coconut. Let's not talk about the hammer. Let's talk about the nail. Why? The hammer doesn't touch the coconut. And that's something that we never spoke about. We'll hopefully talk about it next time. That tefillas kelim is only for those kelim that are going to be touching the food. So if you have the same nail that you're going to use every time, and that nail is the primary, you know, that nail is there, you know, you keep that nail in your, you know, in your kitchen, you have your milchik silverware, you have your fleshka silverware, you have your parv silverware, and the parv silverware, you have your apple core, right? You have your salt, you have your what's it called, the grinder, your pepper mill that you never use, and right next to that you have your nail for coconuts. I would assume you'd have to do two scale on it. Okay, anything else? Okay, that's where we'll end this evening. Bezat Hashem, tomorrow, next week we'll talk about this, what we just talked about, things that are not touching, things that are a little bit removed from the direct preparation of food. And have a wonderful evening and a wonderful week.
About to die.
Did you ever go on these graphic colors?